you found the Digging Oak Island podcast, a podcaster's journey to discover the truth behind the Oak Island mystery. I'm Dave McBride. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. If you've been listening to the podcast and enjoying it, then I would ask that you please help out the show by leaving us a 5-star rating on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, I invite you to join us on Twitter and Facebook. You can follow the show at Digging Oak Island. I want to begin the podcast by answering a couple of listener emails. But before we do that, I was made aware from a listener or two that the podcast had not been available recently, or at least not updating recently on Spotify due to some technical thing that I don't really want to get into. Shockingly, I figured it out and I actually fixed it. Now, let me tell you, that's something I rarely do. Fixing technical stuff is not at all my forte. Anyway, it should start updating regularly now. So if you want to listen on Spotify, apparently you can do so again. Also, like all of us, I've had to make some changes around the house and some things we've needed to do here. And so temporarily, I'm in a little bit of a different studio, not quite as soundproof as the old one. So you might actually be hearing a little bit of ambient noise around me. There is a wicked storm coming through Jersey here. So there's a lot of noise and a lot of wind and a lot of rain. So if you hear a little bit of that, if you're listening on headphones, you might hear a little bit of that. Excuse me for that. I'm hoping that we get back to my old spot on the other side of the room, away from the windows and all that kind of stuff soon. Anyway, let's get on to the emails. All right, first up is a listener named Jeff who writes, I almost fell off my couch when they intersected the Hedden Works. After all these months of calculations to determine where to drill, they strike out. Then after a quick trip to Dan's basement, no way that was their only visit, they find another map and start a new hole 20 feet over. I understand they have access to more information than we do, but it's feeling arbitrary. My personal highlight was Charles saying the last time the money pit was known, in quotes, was 1867. That was close to your take on that question. Good job. Thank you. Now I wonder if they leave us hanging in the swamp. Remember that area was too hard for Billy to dig through. More cliffhangers than a Batman episode. Be well. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. It was my friend Chris Poe who pointed out to me on an earlier podcast about how the narrator of The Curse of Oak Island can often sound a lot like the narrator from the old 1960s Batman show with Adam West. Go back and watch that show again, if you can. He really does. It's hysterical, honestly. You know, will Batman and Robin fall into the Joker's giant vat of green acid? Tune in next week, same bat time. You know, you get what I mean. Think about it like that the next time you watch The Curse of Oak Island and you hear another of the famous Could It Be? From Robert Clotworthy. And shameless plug, you can listen to Chris Poe and I. He is a very old friend of mine and a great radio host, and we do another podcast called Sit Downs and Sessions. I'll mention more of it at the end of this one. Have a listen. Shameless plug there. Can't help it. Yes, indeed, the show can be maddening at times, Jeff. But I suppose that's what I like about it, I guess. And it really drives my wife nuts more than me. It drives her nuts sometimes a lot. You know, I really have to say it. She, I always tell the story about her reaction last season after multiple shows spent looking for this 90-foot stone in the basement of a former Nova Scotia bookbindery. I mean, that search went over multiple seasons, but last year really kind of came to a head. You know, what a big deal the show made over this stone that they found that just had to be the one, the original lost 90-foot stone. Experts were brought in to do laser testing and on and on. It went on for weeks. It was on multiple episodes throughout the season, only to have Maddie Blake say, kind of in passing, months later on an episode of Drilling Down, that the stone they spent all that airtime on was probably nothing but a fake. The look on my wife's face when she figured out how much time she spent watching a show, scenes about a stone that was essentially just a fool's errand all along. Add to that how many things are found that the narrator starts going on a tangent about the Knights Templar, ancient Romans, or whatever, only to be seemingly cast aside and never spoken about on the show again. It can be frustrating. And Jeff, you can rest assured that the show will no doubt leave us with a cliffhanger of some sorts at the end of this season. And I don't just say that out of some sort of snarky take on past seasons of The Curse of Oak Island, but really on the simple fact that Oak Island itself has been giving its searchers and researchers cliffhangers for 225 years. That's just what Oak Island does. It's what it's always done, long before any television cameras came to the island. Oak Island is one big, giant, frustrating cliffhanger. You can bet your bottom dollar we will have ourselves another such cliffhanger at the end of this season. Thanks again for the email. Jeff, let's go on to Eric in Lexington, Kentucky, who asked, Dave, love your podcast. What worries me regarding this upcoming season of Curse of Oak Island, and he's talking about next year, is what the impact of coronavirus might have on production. I'm assuming they are probably filming now, and he wrote this on April 1st. What are your thoughts? Thank you. Eric, as far as I can tell, filming has not yet begun on the island as of this point. But if I'm wrong, please let me know. I know we have some listeners who live and are a lot closer to the island than certainly I am, and they might have some insight on this. But so far, I have not seen anything to indicate film crews are on the island yet. Nothing to indicate that anybody's there or even in the area, but the Canadians, you know. Also, I believe there are current travel restrictions. I don't think that's changed, right? There's so much news and so much coming out that it's hard to keep track of all this, but I believe at this moment there are some travel restrictions between the U.S. and Canada. So I'm not 100% sure that even if the Americans in the fellowship, the Laginas, the Testers, Jack Begley, those guys, I'm not even sure they can get to the island right now. I don't know that. Also, for whatever it's worth, keep in mind that a season 8 has not even been announced or confirmed yet by Prometheus or anybody else. Be that as it may, I can only guess here, but I would say the current crisis will have a big impact on season 8 of The Curse of Oak Island, just like it's having a big impact on literally everything in our lives. I just can't say yet what the nature of that impact might be. Best guess is probably a somewhat shortened season. Maybe less big jobs done by contractors. But even so, you know, wouldn't we all be happy with just Rick, a shovel, and a GoPro camera? I mean, wouldn't we? My point is, I think they can adjust and at least give us something, multiple episodes of something interesting to watch. Now, I have a suggestion on this, if I may be so bold. How about a show or two dedicated to following up on all of those forgotten and orphan artifacts we talked about in our last email from Jeff? Maybe a recap of all the current theories the team is working on and how some of the finds that they have correlate with those theories? How about a long documentary type program, maybe multiple episodes, where we have Charles Barkhouse, Doug Kroll, Paul Troutman, Randall Sullivan, Darcy O'Connor, all these guys that are part of this, giving us a full historical recap, chronological recap of the 225 years of the treasure hunt, the men who were here, what they found, who dug there, you know, what theories these guys liked and for what reason, so on and so on. Really dive deep into the 225-year history of this. There's so many possibilities for what they can do, but I do have to wonder whether Prometheus, having said all this, I have to wonder whether Prometheus itself is capable of doing, you know, anything besides what they have always done. I'm certain the Laginas in the Fellowship are adaptable, and there's so much information in their heads, it's unbelievable. But I'm not sure about the showrunners as much. Not saying they're not, just not so sure. You know, the portfolio of Prometheus is kind of one-dimensional, so maybe that's where the real challenge might be for next year, the creativity shown by the directors and the producers. It's hard to say. Thank you, Eric. I think we're just going to have to wait and see on this. I mean, that's just the way the whole world is right now. I'll be sure to let you guys know anything I find out on this front as far as filming or anything. You know, fingers crossed. As George Harrison said, all things must pass, and let's hope this passes soon, too. On to an email from John in Ireland who writes, just listening to your great podcast. He's talking about last week's. Anywhere there are tunnels, then the potential for cave-ins is always possible and a common occurrence in all forms of mining. Hence, there is no way of knowing how many miners may have been killed since the first tunnels were being dug. While it remains a mystery why the tunnels were dug, but the chances of finding human remains might not be so mysterious. John in Cork, Ireland, and he writes, P.S. By the way, the drain system we recently saw may have been more widespread in old forts at the time because they were similar to what I've seen in Spike Island in Cork Harbor. Now, first, it is an absolute pleasure to hear from Cork, John. Cork, if you don't know, is an absolutely incredible town in Southern Ireland where my forefathers and the forefathers of many an Irish American hopped on a boat to New York in hopes of finding a better life, escaping famine, whatever it might be, persecution, whatever it might be. If you haven't been to Cork, dear listeners, you are missing out. It is a gorgeous town with an amazing history. The Spike Island John is referring to is a centuries-old, I think originally monastical site in the middle of Cork Harbor that was converted into a fort by the British in the late 18th century, right around when the French entered the American Revolution and then turned the American Revolution into sort of a global conflict and certainly a European one. Cork was essentially used as the last jumping-off port for the British before sailing, you know, men and cargo and provisions and stuff across the Atlantic to the colonies. So they used Spike Island as a way to shut off any potential, I guess, naval ambush of their fleet gathered there in the harbor. Remember, it was built in the late 1700s. It's built as a fort in the late 1700s. So there's a big, I think, star-shaped fort there. So you can see the potential connection here to anything built on Oak Island of that same time frame. You would think the two might have some connections, being that they were contemporaries. You know, they probably used similar construction methods. Seems very logical. John, you're absolutely correct also about the dangers of mining, and it does make some sense that you would find human remains in something that would have been a mining site of some kind. You know, all anyone has to do really is read a paragraph or two on the history of coal mining in Pennsylvania alone, and you'll see just how incredibly dangerous this job was. And, you know, still is, for all, in all honesty. I guess the only point for me to make here, because you're absolutely correct, but the only point I have here is that as far as we know, no one was ever mining anything on Oak Island, ever. No record, period, none. So while human remains might certainly be a good indicator of the presence of mining and tunneling and the work done there, then really that's just more evidence of something, you know, very big, very dangerous, and very undocumented taking place on Oak Island centuries ago. Thank you, John. I do hope to make it to Cork someday soon. Now let's go to an email from Duncan, who writes, "Hi, Dave. Firstly, love your shows. They're essential listening for any fan of the TV series. Thank you for that. I always like to leave in the compliments. Makes me feel good when I'm listening to it again later on in editing. The infamous ring found in the last episode by Gary scares me. Was this a plant by someone to derail the Prometheus project? Based on the comparative photos, the rings look so similar, even down to the repairs. True, the detailing on the Gary ring is somewhat obscured by the corrosion and patina, making the comparison that much harder. My only hope is the comment made by the expert, he put that in quotes, who mentions that the design looks chiseled to him. To me, the design on the new ring looks to be embossed or stamped into the metal, not chiseled. I'm really hoping this new mystery is resolved quickly, and the answer is benign. In these trying times, I couldn't take more bad news. Yours sincerely, Duncan in Palm Beach, Florida." Okay, Duncan, specifically, you're asking me whether or not I feel this is a plant by, I guess, someone outside of the show to derail the show itself, to sort of lend a credibility issue to the show. There's absolutely no way to know that. That would seem a stretch because, I mean, I guess somebody would have to have come by, tossed this in, and hoped against hope that in that actual spot, Gary Drayton would be metal detecting. That does seem a little far-fetched. That's all I can say about that one. But other people have also, that I've read on a lot of other places, have also asked, do we think that this is a plant by Prometheus? Now, the idea of a plant from Prometheus, you know, to create a new mystery here is not a new one by any means. I've said this before on the podcast, but it bears repeating here. Author Randall Sullivan tells the story about how the Laginas were very suspicious of that Spanish coin, that piece of eight dated to 1652, I think, found in the swamp at the end of season one. The fact is, Rick and Marty thought it might have actually been planted there by Prometheus. And the brothers apparently threatened to put an end to the show right then and there. But the producers convinced the Laginas that the coin was not their doing. Point being, those of you out there who think that this was a plant from Prometheus, you're not the only one who's ever accused them of that kind of thing, of inventing or planting evidence on the show. But what you're talking about here in your email is, could somebody else have done it to derail Prometheus? I mean, that seems to make some sense. If you feel that there's somebody with a vendetta like that, I just don't know. It's just all speculation. Now, what Duncan is talking about with the ring comparison here is a photo of another incredibly similar ring posted on the Facebook group a few days before last week's episode aired. We talked about this in last week's podcast, so you can go back and have a listen to that. Take a look at our Facebook and Twitter pages to see what I'm talking about here with this specific one. Because, in fact, since last week, he had another ring, maybe even two, I think, have emerged onto social media, making the rounds on social media, and they all look identical to the one Gary found in the swamp, except that they haven't been sitting underwater for however long, so they're certainly cleaner. My only hope is that the corrosion, coupled with the fact that he never really got to see the ring for himself, only photos sent to him, is what caused the gemology expert, the Professor Luton Brain, to think that it was, you know, chiseled centuries ago, not stamped or whatever, however that works. If I were to guess, I would say this ring, you know, is not a plant by anyone, Prometheus or somebody trying to derail them. I just think they found a not-so-old ring that was probably lost by a child or whoever lived or visited on the island, you know, however many decades ago or years ago, and these experts just got their analysis wrong. And should that be surprising? I mean, you know, they probably got it wrong due to a rush to judgment, you know, not just for dramatic purposes, but also for not really closely examining it, and also getting caught up in, you know, Oak Island fever. This happens a lot in any search like this, be it a mysterious treasure, a hunt for ghosts, you know, looking out for UFOs, anything like that, Bigfoot, all of that kind of stuff. I've said this before too. How many times have you watched a ghost hunting show where the investigators hear what to your ears is obviously the sound of an old house settling? Anybody who has an old house has heard that before. But the investigators say, oh, did you hear that? Footsteps. Footsteps. How many times have you seen a Bigfoot hunting show where an investigator will show and the show will actually put up a picture, you know, that has a grainy, distant brown blob in some, you know, in an out of focus photograph. And then somehow these investigators are 100% certain that the only thing they could be looking at here in this photo is a Sasquatch. It happens. And maybe it's happening here to some degree. Gary, Rick, heck, even this university professor, I guess. These guys want desperately, to varying degrees, to find something of interest, to make some kind of significant contribution to the hunt and to the show. And I really think that that plays with their judgment sometimes. I don't know, maybe I'm assuming too much here, but that just seems more likely to me than some kind of plant by the showrunners or somebody who doesn't like them. You know, especially such a bad plant, because you would think if you threw this into the swamp and it was something you got from your mother a couple of, you know, in the 80s or, you know, that, let me put it this way. You would think to plant at least an antique of some kind rather than something like this that's, you know, maybe from the 1970s. And Duncan, when you say you are, quote, really hoping this new mystery was resolved quickly, you know, I wouldn't get too excited about that prospect if I were you. If I had to put a bet on it, I would say last week will likely mark the end of this ring saga on the show. Do you really, really recall a time when Gary Drayton has said anything like, whoops, you know, this is not wrong. You know, it's not what I think it is. I'm wrong. Do you really think a moment will come when Rick Lagina says, oh, this is nothing, it's just costume jewelry, the professor got it wrong? Nothing like that has ever really happened on the show. You know, ever. So I can't imagine it's going to happen here. Anyway, thanks again for the email, Duncan, and thank you to everyone who sent in an email this week. If you too would like to email me and have your question answered on a future podcast, just send it along to digginoakisland@gmail.com. Okay, now let's talk for a bit about this week's episode of The Curse of Oak Island called Springing the Trap. Last week we had a long podcast with lots to talk about. You know, not as much this week, I have to say. Let's start over at the swamp. It really does look like work is winding down a bit over there, as it appears the team's attention has moved a whole lot more towards the money pit, certainly for the end of this season. But we still get to see Gary Drayton metal detecting, and he is in the swamp this time with Alex Lagina on the shovel and Billy Gerhardt working the excavator. In this scene, we have a nice example of something else that many viewers ask about and often complain about, so I thought I might just sort of throw it in here because it seems worth mentioning. Now, while digging, Alex looks over, to his right and says something like, "Hey, look at this," and then reaches down and pulls out something out of the mud. Really does seem a bit, I guess scripted is the right word for it. It's that scripted quality to some of these scenes that makes skeptics suspicious, you know, of anything done on the show, and it frustrates a lot of fans, too. Now, from what I know, and I want to talk about this a bit because it comes up a lot. From what I know from people who I've spoken to who've actually been on the show, been part of the show, plus hearing interviews of people like that and reading articles, you know, that kind of thing. This scene here is an example of something I hear described a lot by all of them. In my opinion, this scene is not really scripted. Now, I have no way to know this, but this is from what I gather. It's not scripted. It's more likely reshot for the sake of the camera or the editors, and also for building a more understandable narrative for the viewer, and I think this is done a lot. What these guys talk about, the people on the show, is that the show is not at all scripted. No one tells them what to say. But sometimes things are found or ideas are hatched, conversations are had when there is no camera rolling, or maybe whoever was talking wasn't facing the lens, you know, or maybe the cameraman was picking his nose or swatting away a mosquito. You know what I mean. Things happen. So they put everything kind of back the way it was, and then they try it again for the sake of getting a good shot of something that, you know, looks interesting, a shot the viewer will enjoy and probably better understand. Ever since I first learned about how often this type of thing is done on all reality shows, really, and it really has been, they now kind of stand out to me. And this is a little moment, you know, this little moment definitely stood out as one such scene. And I just wanted to mention it. A lot of people assume this means the whole thing is scripted. I just don't agree. Anyway, we move on. Gary finds an interesting piece of hand-cut burned wood, charred up wood. We can't really tell anything from it, but it's pretty cool nonetheless. Also, as Billy is clearing more land, Gary and Alex think they are uncovering even more of this paved area. So it seems the size of whatever this is has not really been determined as of yet. Who knows if it ever will be. Gary Drayton also finds two more metal spikes. You know, I think when season 7 is in the books, we can look back and at it affectionately as, you know, we can call it the season of the spikes. How many of these is this now for Gary this year? It seems like dozens to me, but probably not that much. I mean, they really have been ubiquitous this season, and he seems to find them all over the island. As I've said before, evidence of sailors' tools, which this is what they're saying it might be, is not proof, in my mind, of some clandestine work on Oak Island, but instead proof of the obvious that Nova Scotia has been a sailor's haven for centuries. So they bring these spikes up to blacksmithing expert Carmen Legg, and here we are again at this kind of scripted thing. If you go back and look at many of this season's visits, maybe all, I haven't looked at them all of these visits to Carmen's shop, you'll quickly realize, if you compare them all, these were all shot at the same time. Same people wearing the same stuff. Now, to some viewers, this is dishonesty. But I can easily see why they do this, and why it makes sense, and why it's not really dishonest. They have decided they need to edit this into different shows. All of these scenes done at once would be, you know, would consist of an entire episode of nothing but talking to Carmen Legg and having to read these unexplainable subtitles they use when he speaks. I have no idea why they do that, but they do. That just wouldn't, to me, be a very compelling episode, an hour of these conversations. So the guys are then forced to kind of say hello and goodbye to each other and pretend they just arrived and over and over and over again. You know, they have to do this just to make it look like a bunch of different scenes. Again, it's not scripted. It's just massaged. Legg says one of the spikes is likely from the end of what he calls a moss fork or a seaweed fork. Now, I've honestly never heard either of those expressions before. But he does also use the word tine, and that I know. A tine is like a pitchfork, really. So I suppose what he's saying is that there were these, you know, pitchfork type things specifically used for moss and seaweed, and this is off that. It makes sense to me. It's basically a garden tool, not a very unusual find, if you ask me. A seaside garden tool. The other piece, he says, is likely off something called a marlin spike. Now, a marlin spike is an old sailor's tool used for a lot of purposes, things like untying knots or splicing lines together. It really does look like a big sewing needle, really. Being good at using a marlin spike was actually quite a useful trade for a sailor to have, and if he was good at it, that sailor would become quite a valuable member of his crew. Now, here's the thing. Again, finding this is certainly evidence that sailors were on Oak Island, of course. It is not, however, on its own, evidence that a ship was sunk in the swamp, like they always assume, you know, they always take this to that end. Now, I'll admit, you put it all together with the other ship-related finds from the swamp over the years, and it might add to, you know, add a little something to that theory's credibility. But on its own, it seems again to be something one would really expect to find in a very maritime area of the world. Now let's finish up here. The episode begins over at the money pit, so let's finish there. And now we have a new can, one of these big 8-foot cans, which they are calling 8A, I believe is what they said. And it's being driven into the ground and is currently at a depth of 75 feet when we join the program. Now, remember last week, the so-called best attempt at finding the money pit proved to be a failure. So they decided to turn their attention to find something called Shaft 6, which might just contain remnants of whatever was originally in the money pit. Now, I know I do this every week, it seems, and we all hate when the show repeats itself, but let me just give you a quick recap here of what Shaft 6 is for anyone new to the podcast. Very short, I promise. Shaft 6 is a searcher tunnel dug in the 1860s, mid-1800s. According to the records, it got to within a couple of feet of what the searchers thought was the treasure vault, the bottom of the money pit, before it began filling up with mud and water. And soon after, the money pit collapsed, which caused subsequent searchers and researchers, you know, people on the island looking at this, the collapse caused them to assume that at least some of whatever was at the bottom of the money pit, whether it be treasure or debris from the shaft and the collapse, some of that must have spilled out into this tunnel at the bottom of Shaft 6. Make sense? If not, go back and listen to the last couple of podcasts explaining in much more detail. Rick remarks that he truly believes the answers to the Oak Island puzzle lie at the bottom of Shaft 6. Now, this is one of the few times where I just can't really agree with Rick. From what I can conclude, nothing tells me that the bottom of Shaft 6 is anything more than a veritable jambalaya of mud and decades of wood and tools caused by centuries of shovels and bulldozers and dynamite. When Jack Begley says a few moments later that 8A is, quote, the most promising hole ever dug on the island, unquote, I can't help but shake my head and I kind of feel bad for these guys. I mean, the last shaft they dug really was, in my mind, the most promising hole dug in decades. I mean, even I bought into that train of thought. And it all turned out to be, just another hole in Oak Island. It has to be demoralizing for these guys. But what I would call somewhat blind confidence in the next project has really always been the chief motivator for Oak Island searchers, if I'm making sense. You know, it's always been, okay, that didn't work, but the next one will work. That's always been the, you know, what gets these guys up and going and trying again and getting past their failures. And we're talking 225 years of failures. So like I said, what they think they'll find here, the promise of what Shaft 6 might hold, is this idea that something from the money pit will be found within this tunnel that leads from Shaft 6 to the supposed treasure vault. Some evidence of what originally was down there just might have kind of spread out into this tunnel when the pit collapsed. So, I mean, it makes sense. This idea makes sense. But it has to be said, this is also pretty much what everyone else has been trying to do in the money pit area at least since the original location of the pit was lost 150 years ago. Perhaps they have some new information, at least new to them, I guess, which causes the team to feel especially good about this particular location. But it's hard not to think, as this whole progresses, that this hasn't all been done before, hasn't all been tried before, and that this too will end in sorrow like all the rest. The next day, the can is down to about 100 feet. And this is the depth where they expect to start finding evidence of this tunnel. So just to visualize this, they are not digging down what they think is the whole length of shaft 6. At least I don't think that's what they're doing. From what I can gather, and they're very nonspecific with all this kind of stuff, you know. But from what I can gather, they're digging at a point in between where they think the money pit is and shaft 6, basically trying to cut down the middle of this tunnel that runs between the two shafts. Is that what you guys get out of all this too? Like I said, the show doesn't always give us specifics about what they're doing, but just from the way they are discussing this, it seems that is the plan here. So with that in mind, they didn't really expect to find anything much until they got down to what the historical record says is the depth of the tunnel. At about the 100-foot mark, the guy running the oscillator reports what he calls a change in pressure that he's reading off these gauges as the oscillator is going down. This means that he thinks the can is cutting through something other than just dirt. When the next hammer grab comes up, they find what they're looking for, a ton of hand-cut timbers, and some big ones too. Rick says he believes, quote, they found the tunnel. Now, again, I don't want to keep repeating myself here, but remember what they're looking for. They think the treasure, in air quotes, might have also dispersed into this tunnel as a result of the collapse of the money pit. So they aren't just looking for evidence of tunnel works, not just wood and such. They think they're actually going to find bits or at least evidence of the treasure in this tunnel as well. Now let me stop here and turn again to my wife. She really is a great person to watch the show with for me. She is not an Oak Island nut like myself, but she loves the show and has also been watching it religiously since the very first episode. She says to me here, okay, what do they do now? They find the tunnel. Then what happens? Do they send someone down there to look around? Do they really think they're going to pull an intact treasure chest up with that giant thing? And she's referring to the hammer grab. There's all great questions. And ones I can only answer with something like, you know, I guess they jump off that bridge when they get to it. But really, think about it for a second. What is the plan here? Do they just keep dropping these enormous cans into the ground hoping for gold coins? Or hoping they pull out the Ark of the Covenant in the hammer grab? Do they pull the can out and then send somebody down to find this tunnel and then look around? I don't know, but I guess we'll find out if it ever happens. Anyway, at 114 feet, they find a huge piece of hand-cut oak, and that immediately sends the narrator into a tangent trying to connect this new piece of oak with oak platforms reportedly found by the original discoverers of the money pit when they first dug down in 1795. The problem here is, again, with a historical record. This is clearly cut wood if you look at it, meaning it was cut for some, you know, functionary use. It was cut to be something. It's not just a piece of a log. Now, the early accounts of the discovery do tell of oak platforms found every 10 feet, but some of them describe these as logs or timbers, which this clearly is not. But I also read one, at least, that described it as oak planks, which I guess this could be part of. So for all intents and purposes, the team is hoping this is some part of the original money pit here that ended up all the way down at the bottom and in this tunnel as a result of the collapse. Now, keep in mind, they do think the earth has settled quite a bit. I think they say something like 10 feet. And certainly all the digging and all of that stuff done in the area has also played part, all the historical digging, I mean, has also played a part in this settling and moving around. So they're expecting to find more evidence further down than just where the historical records say the tunnel might have been located. But despite more wood and, you know, and even digging down another 50 feet, you know, further down, finding more of this big wood, 8A ends in disappointment and sorrow. No treasure, no one thing, as Rick Lagina likes to say. They did find a couple of interesting pieces, though. I mean, somewhat interesting, I guess. Steve Guptill and Jack Begley are looking through the spoils of 8A on a sorting table. Not sure why the wash plant isn't being used for this, but who knows. The two find a couple of bits of what they think is leather and also a small piece of old metal. Laird Niven appears from behind the bushes at just the right moment here when they find this little piece of metal, and he takes a look at it for himself. Now, he agrees with Begley's initial assessment that it might be from maybe an old strap hinge. Jack then asks Laird something like, could this be part of something used for digging or mining? You know, like something an old searcher would have used when digging here? Or could this be part of a treasure chest? As if those are the only two possibilities of what this might be. Now, after what is obviously a lot of editing, all we really get from Laird is that he thinks that it's, quote, nothing mining related. That's all he says. Needless to say, I would have appreciated hearing a little more of what Laird thought of this item, but I guess we won't be. Also, the hammer grab is dumping dirt on the ground next to the hole. And while doing this, Gary Drayton is metal detecting, and he finds what I can only describe as an old needle. He thinks it might be an old sail needle. Makes sense to me. And this takes us back to that scene with Gary, Marty, and Alex Lagina and blacksmithing expert Carmen Legg to see what he thinks of this needle. Legg does not think it's a sailing needle. The only thing he can come up with is that it was used for some sort of booby trap. Now, the best I can make of this, the best way I can describe this, is something I have only ever heard referred to as an unwelcome mat. I'm sure there's a better name for this, but I've only ever heard it referred to as an unwelcome mat, which is basically a board with needles sticking up. People with cabins in the woods, I think, put these on their porches and in front of their doors and things like that to stop bears from invading and breaking into the cabins when they're not around, you know, in the winter or what have you. I'm sure there's a better name for them, like I said, but this is what was in my head when he was describing what this might be. Now, and also, I'm sure this is in a movie somewhere that uses these for human traps, but I can't remember. But it makes sense to you, right? You have an idea of what I'm saying. Honestly, how many such booby traps from centuries ago could Carmen Legg have seen over the years? Now, he dates it from 1500 to like 1750. But I've seen people use these. You know, I saw one guy use it on a show about Bigfoot where he thought Bigfoot was going to break into his front door sometime while he was searching there. So he put one of these unwelcome mats on the door. So it's not something that stopped being in use as far as I know. I guess to me, this analysis that it was a booby trap just kind of seemed arbitrary. It just seemed like a stretch. I don't know. What do you guys think? Am I missing something in all this? It just seems like there had to be another explanation, at least another possibility to discuss. This is the only thing we could think of is a booby trap for somebody to step on. For next week's preview, and I don't talk about the previews a lot, but from the preview, it appears the team might have found yet another location to dig a very promising 160-foot deep, 8-foot wide hole. I guess if you don't keep trying, if you don't possess perpetual confidence, you might as well leave Oak Island. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Digging Oak Island podcast. Another shameless plug for you. As I mentioned before, I produce another podcast. It's called Sit Downs and Sessions. Me and my friend and radio host Chris Poe sit down over a drink or two, and we talk about pubs and politics, the paranormal, all sorts of stuff. It's basically just two guys at a bar, really. Give it a listen. You could find it, Sit Downs and Sessions, on iTunes and all the other podcast places. Also, if you're enjoying Digging Oak Island, I ask that you give us a 5-star rating over on iTunes or wherever you can do that, wherever you get your podcasts and can leave a rating. A big thank you to everyone who has already left us a 5-star rating. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time to go on there and to do that. And really, thank you for the kind words and the compliments on the show. It means a lot. Don't forget, you can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter. We are at Digging Oak Island. And again, if you have any questions or comments and you want to send them directly to me, you can do so. DiggingOakIsland@gmail.com. I always say this, keep in mind, if you send me an email, if you do direct message me on social media, I may just use it on the show and answer it here. So if you don't want that, make sure that if you don't want your message to be read, make sure that you make a note of that on whatever message you send to me. Also, I want to wish everybody out there, you know, a safe and healthy week. Stay home. Do what the experts are telling us to do. And let's pull through this together. So until we speak again, I'm Dave McBride. Thank you for listening to Digging Oak Island.